It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Phil, how are you?
Atamarie, I'm good, thank you, apart from that event on Saturday night, which was deeply, deeply distressing.
Yes.
Yeah.
The game that shall not be named.
Get over these things. Yeah, but hey, look, the beautiful day the next day was a sign that, you know, all was not lost. Life goes on. The sun still rises.
I feel sorry for the man who got a tattoo with the cup written in it already. He's going to have to get that taken off. It's a bit of a shame.
Hey, yeah.
Lots of big things happening, though, since we last spoke to you. Of course, the most notable being the Auckland fire, the big CBD fire in the Sky City Convention Centre. Do we know any more about how it started, Phil?
No, the investigation's underway now. We're in the recovery stage from the fire. There's still some hot spots there, by the way. So when the wind changed yesterday, there were a couple of small flare-ups, but it's all totally under control. But the fire service stays there for, you know, 12 to 24 hours after the last of the hot spots, as detected by both physical patrolling and by thermal imaging, have actually gone. We certainly don't want those last two fire trucks to disappear and then find that there was a little piece that they hadn't discovered. So caution is the word there. We're just about drained out the basement, which is good. That had 8 million litres of water. They put 30 million litres of water onto that fire.
Wow.
Which is just amazing. Good news there was the contamination of the water that went into the stormwater wasn't as bad as we thought, but the final tests will be available by tomorrow. Meanwhile, over the weekend, Friday and the weekend, we were pumping straight into the wastewater system, so it was going through Mangere.
What's that going to mean? I mean, we're coming into swimming season now. What's that going to mean for our swimming areas around the city? Because obviously a bit of that ends up in the harbour.
As a precaution, they closed St Mary's Bay, but I don't think there'll be any long-term effects or even medium-term effects from that, but we'll have greater certainty around that tomorrow. And the air quality is back to normal, except in our building, where you could still get a whiff of that smoke, even though they've been purging the system over the entire long weekend. So anybody close to the fire, as we were, you know, Wednesday, Thursday last week, my eyes were watering, my throat was sore. It was really unpleasant. We sent most of our staff home, in fact. But that's the short-term stuff. The longer-term stuff, well, first of all, the investigation that you talked about, both the insurance and the Fletcher investigation teams are working at the moment, and not sure when they'll get a result. They'll want to make, particularly given the, you know, you're talking about tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars worth of damage. You want to get it right before you start proclaiming this was the cause and this is where liability rises. But the building is insured, but there are some opt-out clauses there that would obviously have some significance if they were to be employed by the insurance company on Fletcher's and the subcontractors. Then it's a case of once the investigation's complete, the clean-up takes place. They look for the structural integrity of the building. You know, we know the roof's fallen in, but the beams are still, the steel beams are still there in place, and they're not sure whether they have maintained their structural integrity. They may well have, which means that the rebuild job would be a little less than it might otherwise be. And what the medium-term costs, I guess, to the city are is that we don't have the International Convention Centre, so something like the Big Libraries Association convention for 2021, that was going to be, you know, God, 7,000 people, $8 million worth of expenditure. Well, you know, we don't get that. And APEC, well, APEC will still be in Auckland, but it's a really an outside chance that it'll be at the International Convention Centre. But we're working on contingency plans, and we've got officials going down to talk to Wellington early this week. And we probably won't make any early announcement about that until we know quite what the score is with the convention centre. But it, you know, common sense tells you it's pretty unlikely that that will be ready in time for November 2021.
Yes, I can imagine. Now, obviously, our fire services did a fantastic job of keeping that contained and making sure people were safe as well. But were they prepared for a blaze of this scale? Do we need to think about resourcing these better?
Look, first of all, you're right. They they did do a good job, and I spent a bit of time with the fire crews down there, and huge admiration. You know, they were working long shifts, they were lugging around and you know, up a flight of stairs, the those heavy fire hoses. And I think their plan, their strategy was the right one. On the very first day, the fire commander said to me, look, we're going to abandon the roof. We can't save the roof, but that will. The plan is to allow most of that to collapse down onto the fifth floor, because it's a that's where the convention mm-hmm. centre actually is. So there's a big atrium there. Fifth floor is concrete. We'll contain it. We won't let the fire go beyond the building. We won't let it go beyond the below the fifth floor of the building, and that's worked out pretty well. But was it unique for them? Yeah, they don't have a fire like that every day in the city. In fact, they've probably never had a fire of that nature before. The fire commander said that in his whole time with the fire service, he's never had such a difficult, complex and big fire to contend with. Mm. So there'll be learning experiences for the fire service, and that's natural. But, you know, I don't want anything to detract from the fact that the way that that was led and the way that it was carried out on the ground is a real credit to our emergency services.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about Tuia 250, which is, of course, happening at the moment. What are your thoughts on people's concerns that this is glorifying a violent figure in our history, obviously Captain Cook?
I think the 250th commemoration is quite different from the 200th, where people were still talking about Cook discovering New Zealand. Well, actually, the Maori people said, we knew we were here, and actually it was Abel Tasman, the first of the Europeans. But what we've tried to do, I think, as a country this time, is two things. One, to reflect on the navigational skills of successive groups of people that came to this country, starting with Kupe. And if you're going to express admiration, what about admiration for those people in the simple but sound waka that came here, you know, sometime probably close to a millennium ago, just navigating by the stars and using basic sails? I mean, huge admiration to those people. But also to acknowledge Cook and his skills, and Tupaia, his Tahitian navigator and interpreter. You know, the cartography that Cook did from that little boat, and God, the Endeavour is a little boat. I had the chance to go on board her on Friday, and I don't know how people survived on a ship that size over long journeys over the ocean, but he did really accurate maps of New Zealand. Was he a demon? Was he an appalling person? No, I don't think those things were true. Were mistakes made that resulted in loss of life? Absolutely, and Gisborne was the example of that. But, you know, talking to a lot of the Maori people there, they don't want him demonised either. But, you know, you see him as a figure in the context of the time. His records after that incident in Gisborne showed a remorse that that had happened. The instructions that he had from the Royal Society were pretty progressive for the time. Respect the local people, try not unnecessarily to take lives. So I think this is a time to discuss in a free and frank way what actually happened and the good and bad consequences of colonisation.
Do you think that there is maybe something to be concerned about, though, about lumping together the different kinds of navigations like Kupe and things like this? Does it detract from those original navigations to be sort of centering it around Cook as a figure and also as a colonial figure as well? Is it maybe detracting from our very varied history that we have here in New Zealand?
No, I think the government's made the right decision in saying it's about time we started teaching New Zealand history in our schools to everyone. And that history didn't start when Cook arrived here. It started way back when the first human beings arrived in this country, with the figure of Kupe. And I think what that history has to be is comprehensive, but it's also got to be honest because, you know, yes, colonisation had some severely negative effects, and you're still feeling those today. It also had positive effects, and atrocities weren't committed only by European against Maori. Just look at what happened with Ngāpuhi and the march down through Tamaki Makaurau into the Bay of Plenty, where people were raped and murdered. You know, that you've got to be honest with your history. Don't try to sanitise either Maori history or European history. Bad things happened, and remorse and regret and addressing the grievance of the past need to happen. But also remember, this is a time. One of the great things that we did with the Pohiri, when we welcomed the Waka and the tall ships in, was that Maori from Gisborne presented us as part of their taonga a rope, a symbolic rope, and they said, the rope is made up of threads that are intertwined, and that is Maori and European and all of the ethnicities that have come since bound together and gaining strength from the intertwining of the different backgrounds. And I thought that was a beautiful analogy.
Well, we might have to move on to our final topic, Phil, before we run out of time. Just very briefly, what is happening with the City Light Rail project? Where are we at with that at the moment?
Government's looking at two options. One is the probably the traditional New Zealand Transport Agency option of borrowing and building the light rail, and in particular the light rail from the city centre down the isthmus across from Roskill to Onehunga to Mangere. And that was the original plan. Since then, the government got an unsolicited offer from our super fund together with the Canadian super fund to do it differently, and they would fund the capital cost up front. Otherwise, the government was doing that. The government's made the offer to pay for this, and Auckland obviously welcomes that. We're not contributing anything further to that outside of what was originally in the long-term plan. And that scheme seems to be quite different, which includes looking at the potential for undergrounding the light rail in Queen Street and Simon Street and down Dominion Road. Now, you know, it's anybody's guess as to whether that is financially viable. The Superfund might pay for it up front with the capital expenditure, but we would be paying it back as in any public-private partnership with additional operating costs, which would last a long time and be quite expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So they're considering those two, and by February they'll be ready to make a decision at cabinet level as to which of those projects, which of those different options they will take up.
All right.
Now, it's frustrating that it's taking so long, but hey, it needs to happen, and the sooner the government can do that, the better from our perspective.
Well, that sounds good. Well, thank you so much, Phil, for your time this morning. I'm glad
you had a
nice weekend. Hopefully we'll have some better rugby results soon.
Yeah, maybe next Friday will be a little bit better. It'll be a compensation.
Who knows?
I hope.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Rachel. Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Thank you.